website under our business sponsors. Just go to WTRJTheTruth.com.
The Florida Georgia Truth Network, on the air in Waycross at 91.3. Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill. I'm sitting in for Dr. Youngblood. It's always an honor and a pleasure for me to do so. Just a little bit about myself. I live in Pensacola, Florida. I own a small business and insurance and financial services agency. I've been doing that now for 33 years. I was active duty Air Force before I started the financial services and insurance business after graduating from the Air Force Academy in 1980. So I served 10 years active duty, then started my business. I also served in the Florida State House, serving terms starting in 2013 and ended my term in 2020. It's always been a pleasure to join you here on the show. If you would like to call in and comment, the number is 904-831-0917. We have plenty of topics I'd like for us to go over today. I hope we can get through them all. But before we get to that, let's start off with thanking our sponsors. Let's Face the Issues is brought to you in part by Tools for a Time. Tools for a Time is an outdoor dealership company specializing in turnkey business packages for individuals looking to own their own landscape or lawn care business. Tools for a Time also has a full line of hurricane preparedness equipment, including Honda and Echo generators. Tools for a Time staff can answer all your homeowner and professional and backup power equipment questions. They're located at 11291 Old St. Augustine Road, near the intersection of Old St. Augustine Road and I-295, right at the base of the gigantic 165-foot flagpole with Old Glory flying 24/7. Online, they can be reached at toolsforatime.com. That's toolsforatime.com. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and get right into it. Many things we can talk about today. One of the first ones I like to bring up, of course, is what we're seeing that's going on in Israel right now, in particular, the Gaza Strip. Why is Israel so important? For several reasons. As Christians, we know that Israel is the apple of God's eye, that the Bible tells us that whoever will bless Israel, God will bless. Whoever curses Israel, God will curse. So Israel has worldwide ramifications for Christians all around the world. And of course, we all know what has happened over in that area. Just as a very brief review, one day the Hamas terrorists, stormed out of the Gaza Strip and murdered thousands of Israeli civilians. A few soldiers were also killed, but mainly were civilians. They also took over 200 hostages. Now, of those who they murdered, it was women, children, babies who they beheaded and burned. I mean, just a horrific act of barbarism And then they took the hostages back into the Gaza area where those little rats just kind of hang out. Well, Benjamin Netanyahu said, okay, Hamas, you started this war. We are going to end it. And what they did was they told all the non-combatants, all the civilians, as many people as possible to leave Gaza. They said, get out of Gaza because we are going to go in and we are going to put an end to this. We are going to destroy these terrorists. And I'm going to add as an aside, ladies and gentlemen, that I agree with Benjamin Netanyahu 100%. Get as many non-combatants out of there as you can. And now Hamas, knowing that, the cowards that they are, they won't let the non-combatants leave. They put up roadblocks. They take people's car keys. They take their ID cards so that they can't leave. They use civilians as human shields at their combat situations, thinking that Israel, being a compassionate nation, will not go ahead and perform their duty to get rid of Hamas if these women and children and non-combatants are in the way. Well, Benjamin Netanyahu has basically said, we are going to do the best we can to not harm civilians, but this is war. And sometimes there is, unfortunately, collateral damage during a war. And Netanyahu says, we are going in and we are going to end this whole Hamas situation. Now, the thing that's going on is in the Gaza Strip are a number of Palestinians. Those Palestinians were not indigenous to that piece of land. They were brought there way back in the 1920s and 1930s as they were fleeing as refugees from other Arab nations. And those Arab nations don't want them back. Iran, Iraq, Egypt, Syria, Saudi Arabia have stated we do not want the Palestinians to come to our nation, and they will not allow them in. Okay, so Israel is saying we will live in peace with them. And in fact, they have made many, numerous peace gestures over the decades, over the past over 100 years of saying, let's live in peace. And every time they make a gesture, which is giving up land, which is giving up rights to Israelis, the Palestinians reject it. And they reject it flat out. They want to have nothing to do with it. Even when Israel was compelled, that's probably the best word, when they were coerced into forcibly removing a number of Israelis who were living in Gaza, destroyed their homes, tore them down, and they actually left some businesses there that could operate. And they removed the Israeli citizens from Gaza. Well, what did Hamas do? Hamas, instead of using that as a peace gesture, they rejected it outright. They burned and looted the businesses that were there instead of continuing them, the savages they are, and rejected Israel's gesture to say, let's live in peace. So there had been, in the meantime, a truce that had been in place where Israel says, okay, if you don't want to live in peace, just leave us alone. They put up walls to protect themselves. They had checkpoints where Palestinians could come and go between Gaza and Israel. They wanted to come to work, to visit family, just to be tourists or whatever. They could come to Israel, go back and forth. And because of Israel being so generous and not just walling them off completely, oh, and by the way, when you talk about the Palestinians, which there are over 2 million people, Palestinians, who live in Gaza. A lot of people live there, that they voted, so they say, for Hamas to be their leadership. They voted for these terrorists to be their leaders, even though when you look at it in retrospect, especially when you see what has gone on in the recent U.S. elections, that I doubt that Hamas was actually elected, but instead that they were demanded their way to leadership and then became the leaders. They installed themselves, is what I believe. Now, I'll have to admit, I have no evidence of that. That's just my own personal belief. Why would anyone want some barbarians like Hamas to be their leaders? So here's Hamas. It's been a tenuous relationship the entire time because they refuse to be friends, to live on friendly terms with the Israelis. They're taught at a very young age to hate Israel, to hate the Jewish nation, to hate Jews for no reason other than that they are Jewish. It is anti-Semitism at its highest degree. But it's not just Gaza. It's the nations around them also. Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, Saudi Arabia. All of those in the area have this deep-seated hatred for Israel, to the point where after Hamas committed that barbaric action, went in and murdered all those women, children, non-combatants, and some men, and then took hostages, and then like rats, ran back into their little tunnels that they built over in Gaza, Netanyahu responded, and he responded decisively. He went in and he bombed their locations where they were shelling Israel almost incessantly, constantly. They're sending rockets into Israel, into civilian areas, constantly terrorizing the civilians that are there. And Israel, through their technology, was able to build an iron dome to stop most of the rockets that come in. However, Hamas continues to send thousands of rockets into Israel, and Israel was able to block most of those. Some get through and cause damage. Well, now Netanyahu is going and destroying those rocket sites where they come from. Some are mobile, where they can be moved around. So he is going to destroy all of those rocket launchers, and he's not going to stop there. He's going to stop Hamas. And in the meantime, we have around the world, including here in the United States, unbelievable pro-Hamas demonstrations. They're not pro-Palestinian demonstrations, so they say. These are pro-Hamas demonstrations, where they join in the chanting, death to Israel, death to America, right here in the United States. And just recently, there was a riot in New York where they said there were thousands who blocked the Brooklyn Bridge and then went into New York City, causing damage, destruction, just like the Hamas terrorists themselves. And they were allowed to do that for some time until finally the New York City Police Department stepped in and arrested 300 of them. However, they were immediately released and told to make sure you show up for your court date. Right. We'll see how that works out. But in my opinion, Netanyahu is doing the right thing. Get the non-combatants out, as many as you can. Now, I say don't negotiate with the terrorists for the hostages that they have taken, because once you negotiate, they know that it gives them time to rearm, it gives them time to hide, it gives them time to move when you start negotiating with them. And I say don't negotiate, but I say that, but it's not one of my loved ones. It's not one of my family members that has been grabbed. I'm sure if it were, I would want them to negotiate just to protect them. But we're talking about war right now. This Netanyahu has declared war justifiably on Hamas and those terrorists. And so he says, no, we're going to go in and do the job. We're going to finish this. And he started with a number of airstrikes where they went in and hit the combatants. And again, we have now Iran, who is supplying Hamas with their weapons, who has declared that they will now unleash Hezbollah, another terrorist organization in Lebanon, onto Israel if Israel does retaliate. And then the United States responded because Israel is an ally. They went into the region with aircraft carriers, two aircraft carriers, into the Mediterranean. And of course, Iran and the other, those who are inconsequential, started throwing out their threats, but they went beyond just threats. They then started attacking U.S. installations in the area, so that we had over 19 servicemen who suffered injuries. And so over the weekend, the United States, using F-15s and F-16s, struck back and hit those bases in Syria. I suspect they're also going to have to strike back in Lebanon and perhaps in Iran also. And on top of all of that, here is Joe Biden giving these terrorists billions of dollars. And it's not just the $6 billion you've heard about just recently. It's money that was frozen by President Trump and that has been released. They are now able to sell their oil. So now all total value of what Biden has given these terrorists is $81 billion. And on top of all that, he sends over $100 billion to the Ukraine. And then he won't protect our own border. Utterly unbelievable. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Gina Youngblood. If you would like to join in on the conversation, it's 904-831-0917. So shifting a little bit, as we talk about our border, our own southern border, we have a new Speaker of the House, Representative Mike Johnson from Louisiana. I will admit, I knew very little about Mike Johnson before he was recently elected. Cautiously elated at what I am seeing so far. Representative Mike Johnson, Speaker Johnson, was on a Sean Hannity show and asked him what was his worldview on situations not only in the U.S., but around the world. And Speaker Johnson replied, "The Bible. You pick up the Bible and read it, and you will know what my worldview is." And I was elated to hear that. I thought, finally, we have someone who is willing to step up, not be ashamed of their Christian values, and use a biblical worldview instead of the secular worldview, which is doing nothing but causing damage and destruction everywhere it is used, both in the Western world and in the U.S. and around the world. When you have this secularist worldview where you believe that man is who you should put in charge, that you believe that man should control your life instead of letting God and his word control how you live, that the highest authority is God and not man, that's the biblical worldview, But instead, you have these secularists who are saying that government is the highest position of man. And that is why in most of these countries, you'll see it in China and Russia and in other dictatorships, they do not allow religion to be freely practiced there, because they do not want their citizens to believe and to know that there is an authority higher than a state, and it is God's moral law that is the ultimate authority. They don't want people knowing and believing that, and that's why they will outlaw religions in those countries. That's why it was so important that our founding fathers, when they put together our Constitution, that the very First Amendment says freedom of religion, so that we do have the freedom to worship our God as we desire, that the state cannot establish any sort of religion to dictate how we are to worship, but we are to worship on our own. That is so important. Without that freedom of religion, everything else is lost. And very closely associated with that freedom of religion is freedom of speech, so that we can freely speak of our honor, of our worship, of our adoration for the Lord God Almighty, without being retaliated against by the government. And then very closely associated with that in the same First Amendment is the right to bear arms, so that if the government, if the state does try to infringe upon your God-given right of religion, of speech, that we can defend ourselves from a tyrannical government. And ladies and gentlemen, we are seeing right now in the United States a dire need for our Second Amendment, because the state is now trying to impose how we are not only to think and speak, but how we are to act. So you can't even say things nowadays without it being called hate speech. With, by the way, there is no such thing as hate speech that should be enforced by our government. No such thing. Now, there is speech that is hateful and shouldn't be said in a civilized society. It goes beyond just being rude, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about it not being tolerated in our society by society. We should tell someone who is speaking ill towards someone else, hey, you shouldn't speak like that, but that's the end of it. Government should not come in then and forcibly incarcerate you or fine you or tax you because of what you say, what they call hate speech. No, there's no such thing. And by the way, that's only a very recent thing here in the United States. Only within the past, I would say about 20 years or so, since the Obama regime was installed. Because it's my own opinion, just my own, I don't think Obama legitimately won his first election and not his second election. That's just my opinion, ladies and gentlemen. But we can see that in 2020, when Biden was installed, this goes beyond my opinion. We now have evidence that there was a huge amount of election fraud that took place in that 2020 election, and Biden was installed. We saw it in many different states taking place with the absentee ballots that were being counted, where they used COVID as an excuse to extend and open up how ballots were to be submitted, going against their own state law, which says that only the legislative branch can determine how elections are to be held. But instead, we have those in the administrative branch who are making decisions. We have those in the judicial branch who determine how elections were going to be held, which was unconstitutional and flat out wrong. But not only that, we found in five states, simultaneously voting stopped in the very early hours of the morning, around 1 a.m., 2 a.m. or so forth. I think it was 1 a.m. In five states where Trump was leading, had huge leads in the votes that were coming in, all of a sudden they stopped in all five states. And then 2 hours later, it starts up simultaneously again in all five states. And all of a sudden, Biden is thousands of votes ahead, hundreds of thousands of votes ahead, that all the votes that came in during that time when the voting stopped, all went to Biden. Not most, not the majority, but almost all of them went to Biden. That is just too fishy. And anyone with common sense should be able to look at that and tell. So back to Speaker Johnson. The reason why I say I am cautiously elated is because I want to see what happens. Is he going to close the border? Is he going to make sure that if we send funds to Israel to protect themselves, which I agree we should, that it is not going to include additional money for Ukraine? And it's not that I'm so much against all this money going to Ukraine. It's just that so much has already been given to them that has been unaccounted for. They don't know what has happened to all that money that is sent there. And so first we have to get an accounting of what has been sent there before another dime goes to Ukraine. So let's see if Speaker Johnson is going to close our border, get the funding to Israel, stop the funding to Ukraine until it can be done, and to pass these budgeting bills one at a time before you have to do a continuing resolution, which just passes it all the way it has been done, all the budgets together, but which has an awful lot of unnecessary spending. We're talking hundreds of billions of dollars of unnecessary spending in there, instead of looking at each bill to validate what is there, to remove what doesn't need to be there, and make sure that we have a good budget and a budget that can be passed. We haven't had a good budget since the Obama administration, and all of that needs to be fixed. So I want to see what Speaker Johnson is going to do. I believe he is going to do the right thing. I want to believe that he is going to do the right thing. But we have to see. You will know them by their fruits. That comes from the Bible. And I'm sure Speaker Johnson knows that. So let's see what his fruits are going to be. Is he going to be a speaker who is a constitutional conservative? Is he going to be a speaker who is going to live up to his oath of office, that he swears to support, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States? Is he going to stand up to the rule of law, the ultimate rule of law, which is our Constitution? Is Speaker Johnson going to put a stop to all of this invasion we see happening not only at our southern border, but our northern border also? Is he going to put a stop to this invasion that we see of all these illegals coming into our country, most of them men of fighting age, single men coming in? They're not coming in with their women and children. There are some, but the majority of them are single men of military fighting age. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mike Hill. I'm sitting in for Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour. Stay tuned. When you come back, we have so many different topics I'd like for us to discuss, and we will. If you want to join in, the number is 904-831-0917. 904-831-0917.
This is Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood from First Conservative Baptist Church and Conservative Theological University in Jacksonville, Florida. To learn more, visit conservative.edu.
WTRJ, Orange Park, Jacksonville. WAYL, St. Augustine. WATY, Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason. General Motors and the United Auto Workers Union have reportedly reached a tentative contract agreement, a deal that could end the six-week-old strike against Detroit's Big Three automakers. Some limited relief for civilians caught up in the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Some aid has been trucked into the Gaza Strip over the weekend. Former President Trump is predicting victory in Iowa's Republican presidential caucuses in January. Mr. Trump telling a Sunday rally in Sioux City, there's no way Iowa is voting against Trump. More than 1,000 people gathered for an evening vigil, remembering those killed and wounded in Maine's worst ever mass shooting in Lewiston. The names of the 18 victims who died were read aloud at last night's event. On Wall Street, the Dow was up 241 points. More details at srnnews.com.
Do you have earned college credits but no diploma? Would you like to finish your certified degree program? Conservative Theological University can help. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE to schedule your interview appointment. Please leave your contact information for the admission staff to reach out to you. Today's the day. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE for Conservative Theological University.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on three regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on two stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. I live in Pensacola, Florida, and I own and operate a small business, my own insurance and financial services agency. I've been doing that for 33 years now. Before that, I was active duty Air Force officer in the Air Force for 10 years after graduating from the Air Force Academy. And then from 2013 through 2020, I served in the Florida State House. So it's always my honor to sit in for Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. And at the for the rest of the session here, for the next half hour, a number of topics I hope we can get to. One is how energy shares crashed by 37% as renewable bust sparks a green panic. Then there's this great article by Victor Davis Hanson talking about pre-modern diversity versus civilization unity. There's also an excellent article I hope we can get to that talks about why we should end the Federal Reserve. And then finally, if we can get to it, an article of six financial tips I'd give my 18-year-old self. But first, before we get to any of that, we have a caller on the line. It's Jim. Jim, go ahead, please, with your comment or your question.
Hey, Mike, how you doing today?
Doing great, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. Speaker Johnson, or Mike Johnson there, he's got a pretty full plate in front of him for a small amount of time, or at least until the election there. He released a statement, I think, yesterday saying that he was going to keep these bills coming to the House floor separate. And in specifics, he was saying that he was going to do an aid bill to Israel only. No Ukraine, no Palestine in there.
Good.
What I'm going to be interested in specifically is the number of Democrats that will make trouble on that single issue line. Well, I'm calling it a line item because it only covers one thing. Personally, I don't think they should bunch of resolutions into a single bill and then present it on the floor. That's a bad policy, because if it has something good in there and then you vote against it, of course, come election time, they're going to be saying, he voted against this and this was for the people, but they're not looking at the entire bill, which is something else, which may be bad.
So, Jim, I can tell you right now, you asked how many Democrats are going to be against that bill, aid to Israel only. I guarantee you all of them, 100% of the Democrats are going to be against it. Even those who want to be for it, they're so cowardly, they will stay in lockstep and they will be against it. Watch.
Yeah, that part is, why would you commit political suicide on an issue right now that's a pretty good hot button here amongst conservatives and also amongst Democrats as well across the nation? To me, I believe what you're saying. I do believe that they will not stand with it, and they'll come up with all kinds of excuses as to why not to, but this is an issue that shouldn't have any debate.
Well, agreed, Jim. But here's another interesting point I was thinking as you were talking about that, what's happening over on the Senate side? How are they going to vote on this once the House finishes it and sends it over to them? And where is Mitch McConnell in this whole discussion? Maybe he has made some, I haven't heard a peep from him, or haven't read a peep from him about how he supports Speaker Johnson, how he supports the idea of what the House wanting to send only single bills forward, appropriation bills. Haven't heard a peep out of him. Maybe you have, Jim, but I haven't. But it's going to be interesting to see how the Senate responds to all this.
Yeah, that I have not heard anything out of Mitch McConnell as well. And we both know that the tie-breaking vote resides with Kamala Harris. So the chances of it getting past the Senate in any shape, way, or form, or without being kicked back to the House, is also low. So I agree with you on that statement too, sir.
Oh, absolutely. Now, there is some hope over on the Senate side that a few Democrats will peel off over to the Republican side. There's Manchin, who is going to be in a race for his life with his next election coming up. He might just peel off over to the Republican side. And then there's also, what's her name out of Arizona?
Sinema.
She may also peel off. Those two seem to be, on occasion, independent thinkers. I think it kind of depends on who speaks to them last. But we'll see what happens over there. But there's always the danger, because we have seen it time and time again, Jim, that there are some Republicans who will go against it. I don't understand these Republicans who do that. But
you mean like Collins, Murkowski, Romney?
Right.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but those are the first names that came to my head when you started saying that.
No, and you're absolutely right. They do. And then there are others who will surprise you here and there. And you're like, what? But you never know with those guys. Kind of like with the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court. You never know if they're going to come up with the right answer. Everybody knows what the right answer is. But those guys will start twisting and turning themselves in all kinds of different shapes and will come up with an answer and then try to justify it in their mind as to why they did it when everyone knows it's wrong. So you never know with those guys. But Jim, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it. You have a great day.
You too.
Now, let's go to this article written by Victor Davis Hanson. It's called Pre-Modern Diversity versus Civilization Unity. It's a great article, recently written just the other day. And Victor Davis Hanson, who I do admire his writing style and what he has to say on many issues, begins like this. Few Romans in the late decades of their 5th century AD empire celebrated their newfound diversity of marauding Goths, Ostrogoths, Visigoths, Huns, and Vandals. These tribes en masse had crossed the unsecured Rhine and Danube borders to harvest Roman bounty without a care about what had created it. Their agendas were focused on destroying the civilization they overran rather than peacefully integrating into and perpetuating the empire. Ironically, Rome's prior greatness had been due to the extension of citizenship to diverse people throughout Europe, North Africa, and Asia. Millions had been assimilated, integrated, and intermarried, and often superseded the original Italians of the early Roman Republic. Such fractious diversity had led to unity around the idea of Rome. And just as a little aside, you might recall when Paul was going to be beaten in the book of Acts, we have the example, he was going to be beaten when he was in this city simply because he was preaching the gospel. And Paul asked the person who was going to beat him, is it lawful for you to beat a Roman citizen without a trial? And the man said, you're a Roman citizen? He said, I had to pay for my citizenship. And Paul says, I've been one since birth. And that put fear into that jailer who was going to beat him and instead agreed to let him go. So that was just a little aside of how Rome's greatness, as Victor Davis Hanson makes in his article, had assimilated and integrated many into the Roman Republic. Now, new citizens learned to enjoy the advantage of habeas corpus, sophisticated roads, aqueducts, and public architecture, and security offered by the religions. The unity of these diverse people fused into a single culture that empowered Rome. In contrast, the later disunity of hundreds of thousands of tribal people flooding into the divided Rome doomed it. To meet the challenges of a multiracial society, the only visible pathway to a stable civilization of racially and ethnically shared people is a single shared culture. Some nations can find collective success as a single homogeneous people, like Japan or Switzerland. Or equally, but with more difficulty, nations can prosper with heterodox people, but only if united by a single inclusive culture, as the American melting pot once attested. But a baleful third opinion, a multicultural society of diverse, unassimilated, and often rival tribes, historically is a prescription for collective suicide. And we are beginning to see just that in America as it sheds the melting pot and adopts a salad bowl of unassimilated and warring tribes. The U.S. is now seeing a rise in violent, racially and religiously motivated hate crimes. The border is non-existent. Millions of unlawful immigrants mock their hosts by their brazen, illegal entrance. They will receive little civic education to become Americans, but they will learn that unassimilated tribalism wins them influence and advantages. In contrast, America was once a historical example of a multiracial but single culture democracy that actually worked. Multi-generational Americans were often energized by keeping up with new hardworking immigrants determined to have a shot at success in a free society long denied them at home. Other large nations have tried a democratic multiracial experiment, most notably Brazil and India, but both are still plagued by tribal feuding and serial violence. What once worked for America, but now is forgotten, where a few precepts essential for a multiracial constitutional state wedded to generous immigration. One, America is enriched at its cultural periphery by the food, fashion, art, music, and literature of immigrants. But it would be destroyed if such diversity extended to its core. No one wants Middle East norms regarding gays or emancipated women. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm reading from an article by Victor Davis Hanson that was written recently. If you would like to comment on this, or you have questions, please call in at 904-831-0917. Continuing with the article, no one prefers Mexican jurisprudence to our courts. No one here wants the dictatorship of Venezuela or the totalitarianism of communist China. Two, people vote with their feet to immigrate to America. They flee their native culture and government to enjoy their antitheses in America. But remember, no sane immigrant would flee Mexico, Gaza, or Zimbabwe only to wish to implant in their new homes the very culture and norms that drove them out from their old. If they did that to their new home, it would then become as unattractive to them as what they fled. Three, tribalism wrecks nations. Just compare what happened in Rwanda and the former Yugoslavia or Iraq. Anytime one ethnic, racial, or religious group refuses to surrender its prime identity in exchange for a shared self of sense, other tribes, for their own survival, will do the same. All then rebrand their superficial appearance as essential, not incidental, to whom they are. And like nuclear proliferation that sees other nations go nuclear once a neighboring power gains the bomb, so too the tribalism of one group inevitably leads only to more tribalism of others. The result is endless Hobbesian strife. Four, immigration must be measured so that newcomers can be manageably assimilated and integrated rather than left to form rival tribal cliques. Five, it must be legal. Otherwise, the idea of citizenship is reduced to mere residency while the legal applicant is rendered a fool for his adherence to the law. Six, it must be meritocratic, so immigrants come with English and skills and do not burden their host. And last, it must be diverse. Only that way can all groups abroad have equal access to the American dream. A diversity of immigrants also ensures that no one particular ethnic or political tribe seeks to use immigration to further divide the nation. In sum, the old immigration once enriched America, but our new version is destroying it. And I say Victor Davis Hanson is exactly right. He is a distinguished fellow of the Center for American Greatness. He is a classicist and historian at the Hoover Institution, Stanford University, and the author of The Second World Wars, How the First Global Conflict Was Fought and Won. Victor Davis Hanson made some excellent points there in his article. And if anyone wants to comment on that, please call in at 904-831-0917. Okay, now let's go on to something else. I might be a little more lighthearted, but still just as serious. And this is an article that was found in the Foundation for Economic Education, a great group. They understand how money works and why. And this article was written by Jan Miltimore, Six Financial Tips I'd Give My 18-Year-Old Self. I read this and I thought it was right on, so I wanted to share some of it with you. Jan goes on to state, I sometimes wonder what it would be like if my 40-something self talked to my 18-year-old self. I think I'd tell my younger self, congratulations, you didn't totally mess up. I say this because I've always feared failure. Some people are afraid of heights or public speaking. I was always motivated by fear that I'd fail at important things. Fortunately, life has been pretty good to me, and I'm grateful for that. I have a happy marriage, 3 healthy children, a job I love, and a nice house to live in. We eat well and save well, take vacations every year, and soon we'll be debt-free. He's living a great life. Does that mean I've done everything right? Hardly. On the contrary, I've made more than my share of mistakes on his journey called life than I care to admit, including plenty of financial ones. But that's life. We make mistakes and hopefully learn from them. Still, it doesn't mean you have to make my mistakes. I won't claim to have all the answers, but here's some financial takeaways I'd share with my younger self. Number one, take out smaller student loans. Now, that's his advice. My advice is don't take out a loan at all. But at any rate, back to his article. In case you didn't know, the whole student loan business is a mess. Like most people, I learned the hard way that loading up on student loans is great during college, but paying them off isn't nearly as fun. Sure, I needed the money. College is expensive, but I took out more than I needed. You got a great interest rate, a friend told me. You can just invest what you don't spend, and you'll earn more on the interest than you'll pay on your loan. Maybe this advice was good, or maybe not. We'll never know, because I didn't invest a penny of it. More on that later. But I did manage to go on spring break every year and probably spend a lot more money than I otherwise would have. Two, always have a college job. Except for my freshman year as an undergrad, I was pretty good about working lots of hours while I was in school. It helped that I liked my job and that I worked with my friends. Graduate school was a different matter. Apart from my teaching assistant position, which didn't require much work, I never had a job. I didn't think I needed one because a lot of my school was paid for, and this would allow me to study even more. This was a bad decision on my part. I would tell my younger self not to pass up an opportunity to have a steady income, even if it's a small amount. There are plenty of jobs out there that will allow you to study and make some money. Your job, whatever you choose, is likely to offer you some good experience and will keep you productive in addition to the money you get from it. I see we do have a caller on the line, Josie. Josie, please go ahead with your question or your comment.
Hello?
Hello, Josie, are you there?
No, this is a different person.
Oh, yes. Is this Jose?
How do you? I know you were in office a while back. How do you feel? Because I'm so upset when I was watching the news in Chicago that they sent some notifications to the, you know, old people, low income in Chicago. They had to evacuate where they were living to house illegal immigrants. I mean, that's upsetting. What can the American people and the law-abiding people in this country can do for this nonsense to be stopped? Because this is so unfair. If that's one of my parents or my dad, I'll be mad. I mean, this is crazy, brother. I don't know what you take on, since you've been in office and you know the enemy from within. What do you take on that? Because that's crazy. I'll be listening.
Yeah, that's a great point you brought up, Jose. And I'm sorry I mispronounced your name incorrectly.
It's okay,
I just read it wrong. You're right. We're seeing in Chicago,
yes,
where they are displacing American citizens who are living in either shelters or in Section 8 housing. They are being forced out, and these illegal immigrants have moved in. I mean, that's outrageous. It is wrong. There is no way that an illegal immigrant should misplace an American citizen. Instead, these places like Chicago, New York, San Francisco, who said they are sanctuary cities for illegals, you need to tell Biden to come to his senses and no longer accept these illegals. We don't have enough room for them. We don't have the money for them. We can't afford it. Build the wall and stop these illegals from coming in. Thank you for your call. Let's continue with this article, six things that I would tell my 18-year-old self. Number three, invest every year. And just for the lack of time, let's go through the rest of them. Number four, don't buy the dip in a bear market. You know, you always hear buy low, sell high. And so here it is. You assume that buying a stock at $50 is a good deal because you love the company and was selling at $100 last week or $150 2 weeks ago. All fundamentals aside, you should know the fundamentals of a company if you're looking to purchase shares. If you're in a bear market, that stock could easily hit $10 before $150. Number five, attack high interest debt. In other words, pay off your credit cards. Pay off any high interest debt first, and then go to the low interest debt, making minimum payments on the low interest debt. And then number six, he says what he would tell his 18-year-old self, drink less, especially in bars, which I would agree to. If you, not only because it's expensive to drink in bars, but also because it affects you negatively, both health-wise and be able to make sound decisions. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a blessed day.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University.
12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with them. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800